How's it going? And welcome to episode 241 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I am Adam Howe, joined per usual by Kevin Hastings. We've got a great show for you lined up as we initiate protocol preview, whatever. I have that written down, so whatever. It came off the top of my head. And we do things a little bit differently, as we talked about earlier. We are going to get going with all those episodes. But first, Kevin, great to have you back. We got a little bit of a delay in our recording. I'm glad that we're both at 100% to get behind the mic. How you feeling? How you doing?
Doing all right, Adam. Thank you so much. Great to see you. Great to be back. I was the reason for the delay. I had no voice, like zero, for 3 days. And when your job is a tour guide, number one, that had a lot to do with it. Number two, it was pretty catastrophic there for my income for a few days as well. Jeez. But it's great to be back. I did do a full day tour yesterday, so my voice may be a little rough still. I apologize for that, but it's typically a rough voice anyway, so I don't know if anybody's noticing what I notice. So it's great to be here and talk baseball. And I was we were talking a little bit before we began recording. We're recording right after day one of PitchCon 2026 just came to a close. Another fantastic day, as it is every year, and wrapped up with the graphics design contest. That's one of my favorite segments every year. And congratulations to Justin, back-to-back champion of panel, I guess we call it, at PitchCon there. So yeah, it's great. And we got 3 days left. By the time people are hearing this, we'll be wrapping up day four probably. But get those donations in, ALS. This is a fundraiser, and we've done amazing the last couple of years. And I know it was a great start to today with the money coming in, the donations, and let's keep it up and keep it going. And if you're listening to this after PitchCon ended, I'm sure the donations will still be accepted.
Yeah, absolutely. They usually are, no matter what, when. It was crazy. I mean, I haven't looked today, this evening, so I don't know where we're at now.
But it was already, we were already at the halfway point early in the day. Well, yeah.
We are already over two. So the goal is 10,000. We were already over 2,000 before PitchCon started.
Right.
That was amazing. Just seeing that aspect that it, you know, the word had gone out, people were just throwing money around for obviously a very good cause, year in and year out. It's always benefiting ALS research, this time through ALS One. And so shout out to them and just being a part of the programming as well. We're probably going to, you know, put this out during PitchCon. So if you are listening to this before the end of Sunday, stop. Just go tune in to PitchCon instead. We'll still be here. This is a recording. Right. This is definitely evergreen content, at least for this off season. By all means, you can push pause, go log in, go to pitcherless.com/PitchCon. And you'll find all the information. It's over at on the Pitcherless Twitch channel as well, live anywhere between 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern time every day, Thursday through Sunday of this weekend. And I love picking this weekend. Nick does it every single weekend, every single year. It's the weekend where there's that other sport's not happening. So you have no excuse.
Perfect.
Right? What else are you going to do? But as I alluded to at the beginning, where I said it outright, we're going to start our preview episodes. And as I've mentioned in past episodes, and I mentioned already today, we do things a little bit differently than a lot of other shows do their previews, which has a lot of value. They go position by on my panel today at PitchCon, we went position by position, right? We were talking about ADP battles in some pockets with Ben Palmer. Shout out to Ben Palmer. He did great.
It was amazing. I was dialed in during that portion of the show. Honestly, it was amazing.
I was doing so much maneuvering, trying to try to get all my windows, because I was sharing player pages and Process Plus charts at the same time. And so I didn't realize, I totally forgot that there was a comment section. So I wasn't watching the comments. And then I made the mistake of moving over to the comments, and first thing I saw was wrong. Somebody disagreed with my take on Roman Anthony. And I apologize to them if they're listening to this. Yeah, I think I'm just being a little bit less risk. I'm being more risk averse this year going into my drafts. Maybe I'm still reeling from our last episode where we talked about all the guys who are over the age of 35 who can still give us value and consistency, as opposed to anybody under the age of 25, you're just not 100% sure about. Anyway, that being said, we are going to go into our preview episodes by going category by category, the same way we do our in-season episodes as we're looking at Fab. We're going to start with power. We're going to go into speed. We're going to go into opportunity. Those are our hidden categories. Of course, they incorporate the standard 5x5 categories that you're rooting for in your roto leagues. And then, of course, we have our three pitching categories that we will go into: our volume categories, our wins and strikeouts, our ratio categories, of course, ERA and WHIP, and then our saves, of course, has its own episode. We will, if time permitting in the offseason, we will get to a wild card episode as well that kind of encompasses everything. Probably the most fun episode, just because we get to throw as many darts as possible.
And most fun this time of year when we're still hopeful on a lot of these guys.
Usually that's the last one. So we'll do it like in the middle of spring training. Not all the cuts have been made. You're like, oh, is this guy going to make it? Is he going to hold off? Is he going to earn his spot? I don't know. Oh, he actually already has been cut, but we think he's going to come back up early on. Yeah, a lot of questions to be asked. Not a whole lot of answers, which makes it a lot more fun. But we'll start here with power, Kevin, of course. And we're going to get right into it. I think we're going to mix and match some news as we talk about some of these players that fit into this category. But going right into it, let's make this a little bit more of an evergreen, at least for this offseason episode. And overall thoughts, first and foremost, Kevin, on how important power is going to be or has been in your draft so far in 2026, and how does that differ from previous seasons? This is a question we ask ourselves every single year, because you really have to have a general understanding of not only how are you going to fill certain positions in your roster, because obviously you have to fill them all in order to get as much volume as possible, but you also have to realize, where am I going to get that power from? Where am I going to get that speed from? Where am I going to get all the five categories from? And they come in all shapes and sizes. They can come from different positions. But it's not always easy to get some of those categories later on in your draft. So where is power fitting in for you as you continue your prep?
It is a huge focus for me in 2026. And this has kind of been building over the past 2-3 fantasy baseball seasons. I think this has kind of been surprising isn't the right word, but it doesn't feel like it used to be as hard to fill our power categories. It was more the ratios and the stolen bases, of course, have always been a big focus, and how are we going to squeeze those in? But over the past 2 or 3 fantasy seasons, as we're doing our in-season episodes for Fab, there's been a lot of comments and a lot of people in the chat and such. Oh, I'm short on power. I'm low on power, and we're looking for power late in the season. And I think this is, it's really come to the point where, you know, when we're looking at our targets, our category targets, right? Regardless of your format, you need at least 24 to 25 home runs per position in your lineup on average. So when you start drafting some guys that are 15 home run, 35 stolen base guys with a good batting average, those guys are amazing for our fantasy teams. They're still putting us behind in power. Mm-hmm. And it's more difficult to make it up in the numbers that we need to make up these days. You know, a 15 team NFBC league, we need 24 home runs per 14 offensive positions. That's including both catchers. That's including all your stolen base guys. They have to average out to 24 home runs apiece to hit our targets. And that has made this such a big focus. And I think there's kind of three classifications of guys we're going to talk about. There's reason guys get drafted later, right? There's reasons they aren't going earlier. Some of these guys are going to be similar to last week's conversation, old and boring, and they'll get us. They may not get us every category. Nobody's getting us every category at this point in our drafts. But some old and boring guys, some young guys taking a shot on, are they going to get the playing time? And that's going to be a huge focus of our conversation, as it was before we started recording as well.
Yep.
Playing time is a huge factor for some of these. And then guys coming off injury. There's a reason these guys aren't being drafted earlier. So none of them are going to be perfect, but these are all guys that I am considering late in draft due to just wanting to fortify that the home run and RBI categories.
Yeah. I mean, if you look just at home runs, which I think is, you know, just a better overall like indicator of power, because obviously with a home run, you get the free RBI to go along with it, at least the one. And typically you see a couple more on top of that. Like they're looking at PLV projections in the, you know, at the top of the draft, at the top of your drafts. I mean, there are only 6 guys that PLV projects for 35 or more home runs on the season, which is not rare, right? Like this is, you know, this is an extreme with Aaron Judge being the only one over 50. Shohei Ohtani, if you round up, he's at 50 as well, 49.6 home runs. But the point is that you're probably not getting two of these guys unless you double tap on the corner. Maybe you get lucky with the Juan Soto, and then Cal Raleigh drops to you toward the back end of the second round. Then you get 40 home run type of potential. But what I'm saying is that you're not going to typically be able to really pad your home run total, your power total, with your first two or three picks in your draft, especially if you throw a pitcher in there as well. And so you really have to be conscious about every single pick that you make on the hitter side in the early part of your draft, that you're not doing anything to be detrimental to that category. And to your point earlier, like, yeah, there's some, you know, it makes looking at the Jackson Churios, the Trey Turners early on in the drafts that much less, you know, no matter how good they are as players and how well-rounded they are, it makes me think two or three times before pulling the trigger there, just because I know how important that those home runs are going to be come the end of your draft. And here's the thing, the catches, we're going to talk about some options, right? Later on in your drafts, we're going to talk about some options. They come with baggage. And we know this. One of the main guys we're going to talk about will completely tank your average. Yeah. More than likely. And so like they come with that baggage. The only place we talk about this with first base. This is something that really, I really was thinking about a lot more in my panel as we talked about Vlad versus Pete Alonso, versus Nick Kurtz. Like, am I waiting for first base long? Because what's the difference between number four and number 12? Like, not a whole lot. But the thing is that these three guys, assuming that Alonso can hold on to that 270 average in Baltimore, which, like as mentioned, is more likely than if he had stayed in New York, that baggage isn't like, at first base, that you get the whole package minus the stolen bases with that category. So I might be thinking more strongly about, you know, grabbing that first baseman. That's, yeah, you're going to get that power from a Christian Walker, but at the same time, it comes with the baggage of not knowing about playing time 100% throughout as far as health goes. It comes with, you know, batting average concerns. We don't care about that right now, but it is something you have to consider as you are creating your whole strategy, especially at the top of your draft.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, of course, home runs aren't the only category here. How much do you like? Are you focused? Like I just mentioned, like I'm using home runs as my example in that one because RBIs come with it. But where do you kind of draw the line? Like, are you still focused on RBI and then hoping because of the RBI? Like, how much can you how much can you put value wise onto a player that's going to be in the two, three, four spot in the lineup throughout the course of the year that doesn't have a high ISO, that doesn't have a high slugging percentage, that is still going to be put in the right spot to provide you with that the half of that power category that you're still looking for?
Yeah, I am similar to you. I focus on the home runs and the RBI. I look at RBI projections and such, but I kind of I don't want to count things twice, and this isn't analysis for a player and not an algorithm going into a projection. However, at the same time, when we start talking about the lineup around players, that's what we're talking about, right? We're talking about their run and RBI categories because of who's around them. Mm-hmm. So I feel like if I'm focusing on home runs and also focusing on players in good lineups, then the RBIs are taken care of to an extent. Of course, we have I remember a few years ago, Starlin Marte hitting cleanup had like mid-20s home runs and 45 RBIs. It was just crazy. That's very rare. I feel like if you're in a decent lineup and hitting the home runs, the RBI should come.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty close to a one-to-one correlation as well. Yeah. When it comes to like projections, home runs and RBI, there are some exceptions that I'm just like kind of just making a mental note on. Teoscar Hernandez comes up. Manny Machado comes up on this list. I'm just looking for guys that are right around the 25 home run mark, at least projected wise, but still over the 85 RBI mark. Mm-hmm. Jackson Merrill is right there. Vinny Pascantino makes that list as well. So the question is like how much am I weighing the fact that, hey, if they're projected to be in that spot of the lineup in a good situation and collect those RBI, am I okay with like, hey, the power will come. Maybe they haven't shown it. Maybe the projections are off a little bit. If they're going to be put in that position to get those RBI, that means they're going to get pitches to see. They're going to get pitches to hit, and they could take advantage of that. Their team's not putting them in that position so that they won't be able to. So, Vinny P being kind of like that, you know, this is how you kind of find sleepers in the category, right? It's like, well, if they're going to get these RBI, how, you know, they're just going to get them just by doubles. Line drive rate is one of the, like the flukiest. It's like it's the thing that you can't predict, right? Line drive rate changes all the time. You really got to see if guys are making the adjustments to hit more fly balls and if they're, maybe their walls are being brought in or down in the new year, and if projections haven't caught up to that fact. Of course, I'm still talking about Vinny Pescantino still in Kansas City. So these are things that you have to also understand whether or not these things are taking into account when you are looking at different projections. And we're going to talk about somebody later on. I mean, I'll just bring him up. Like Matt Wallner came up in a bunch of these lists. Obviously, he's not going to perform to the projections because certain other things have come to light that obviously these projections can't be hit. So you do have to know, be aware of what, you know, news has been come out since the projections have been updated. And if those things are being taken into account, you know, you can usually find information on that or just reach out. Most of the people who make these projections are readily available in some social media capacity. I personally don't think this matters as much as maybe it did at one point, but like, are you targeting power in a particular category, in a particular position? Like, if, are you saying to yourself, like, listen, if I'm not going to get 20 home runs from my third baseman, what's the point? Like, I need to target. That's where I need to get my power. That's like a traditional mindset. The corners get you your power. The middles get you your speed. But I don't know that it matters so much. But are you afraid, I guess, if you don't get power from a certain position, that you're going to be kind of behind the eight ball?
A little bit. Like you said, maybe not as much as I used to be. And I pay more attention to that with speed, right? Because there are certain positions where there is very little, if sure. any, right? So I don't worry about it to that extent. Like, for example, third base, right? You have Jose Ramirez, Michael Garcia. That's about it. Off top of my head, for stolen bases, right? Mm-hmm. There are a lot of guys with power. So I don't take it into as much consideration as I do with speed, because the problem is, if you don't get what you're alluding to, if you don't get power from the position that everybody else in your league is getting power from, then you're behind at all your other positions. I take that more into consideration with other categories than I do power.
Fair enough. It kind of works the other way.
First base, maybe. Like, you were bringing up the first baseman. Yeah, we've been talking about, there's a lot of the 30, 90, 30, close to 100 guys. I'm making sure I'm getting one of them. I don't want to miss out on those guys, too, and end up somebody that I'm not expecting at least 25 to 30 home runs from at first base.
I will say, like, this is what makes Bobby Witt Jr. consideration in the top two or three picks, like in pretty much every draft, is that you are getting the whole package at a position where you're not necessarily going to find your power as well, right? Because you, like you said, you're going to expecting to get speed out of your middle, and that's where you're not going to get your speed out of your corners. So if you know you're going to take that chance to get a 30-30 type of player at a position where it makes up for getting a 20 or 25 home run third baseman down the line. You're not going to get that 30 home run guy later on in your draft. Yeah, it's just tougher just because, as you mentioned, like you almost feel like you need to get the padded power out of the corners because you're not getting the other categories there as well, where you're not typically getting the at least the stolen bases from those positions. As we, you know, move into talking about some players, and we are going to, of course, get to that. I think have you done the math? And I haven't done this. I'm kind of putting you on the spot. Have you done the math on what it is you're targeting in both power categories in a typical, you know, 12 or 15 team roto league?
Yeah, that 24 to 25 per player. Mm-hmm. I'm shooting for close to 350 home runs in two catcher, five outfielder, middle infield. When we have 14 starting positions for our hitters, I want to push 350 home runs. You're not going to be able to draft that.
Sure.
That takes in-season maintenance to get there, but you want to get as close as you can without hurting your other categories on mm-hmm. draft day, right? So, yeah, I'm shooting for that 1,400-plus RBI. 1,100-plus RBI. So we're getting up there, right? That's like 80 per player. Takes in season maintenance. You're not drafting 14 guys projected for 80 RBI. It's just not going to happen. You're not going to draft enough guys with 100 RBI to make up for your guys with only 60. And you're going to draft guys that aren't projected for 60 RBI. So it does take in season maintenance, but we want to get as close as we can with guys that we think can help us all season long.
I mean, and you're going to hear us talk about this a lot. It's like, if you're going to draft somebody, you just have to know who you are, right? As a manager, mm-hmm. you got to know how much time and effort you are willing to put in. And if, you know, you're somebody like Nick Pollock and they don't want to think about hitting, you know, you're going to start pitcher, you're going to start hitter heavy. You know, you're going to go five or six rounds just getting hitters you know are going to play every day, pending injury. You're going to be way less risk averse. You're going to be more risk averse in those selections, because you don't want to have to deal with the platoons. You don't want to have to deal with, you know, spending the, you know, a dollar here, $2 there throughout the course of the season, filling in for different situations that may arise. But if you feel super comfortable and confident in how much time you're going to put into your fab in a fab league, or just building your bench in your draft and hold to kind of fill in those platoon options or those, you know, possible injury replacements, then you can find plenty of value. You just have to be able to do the work. And there's a lot more things that could go wrong in that situation, of course, as well.
Yeah, you're making an argument right there for waiting on pitching. But then the flip side, are you comfortable finding pitching later? And if you are, that's a great argument, because then you are padding these categories for the guys that aren't going to get that per position target that we're looking for.
Yeah. I mean, when you're doing that, of course, you're still going to have to do some maintenance, but it'll only be because of injury, right? Like again, you could pick wrong and there could just be somebody who just busts. And this is why I'm probably staying away from the likes of Roman Anthony, as exciting as he is as a player. Like, there's always a chance that he can, you know, he just doesn't pan out in his first full season in the big leagues, right? And so I may not want to have to manage that in season. I only want to have to deal with injury, right? And even then, I'm going to try to be as conservative as possible with those selections so that I'm not making all of those types of moves. Everybody, that's as the other side, if you are going after pitching in during the season, so is everybody. I don't care what strategy you take. Yeah. You're still going after
pitching. You're not the only one.
Yeah. Yeah. But you'll still have the same free agent pool of hitters that you can consider as everybody else. So you may just not have to be as aggressive on those hitters in those situations, and you can be more picky and choosy when you have to spend that money. And you can spend more of your time and more of your fab dollars getting the pitchers you really feel comfortable with if you do pad those, especially power categories, early on in your drafts that are a little bit more consistent. All right, so we typically do this where we go toward the end of your drafts, ADP of 325 or later, kind of looking for diamonds in the rough. It's very rough in most circumstances. It's not very shiny and worth a whole lot, but there are some names that we need to keep an eye out for if you're trying to fill power later on. And we're going to get to that list and talk about all those players right after this break. All right, we are back. Of course, you're still listening to On the Wire. Theme today is power. Name of the episode is We Have the Power, in honor of the new He-Man Masters of the Universe trailer that dropped a couple weeks ago, or a couple days ago, really, at this point. So that looks fun. If you're, you know, of a certain age, you remember playing with all those toys and watching the shows.
I didn't have the toys, but that was right after football practice growing up. I'm in on this trailer. Absolutely.
I will say Skeletor looks great. We'll see how it all kind of works itself out. But yeah, definitely memories have been flowing back in. I'm pretty sure I had one of the toys, a couple of those. So it was fun to see. So let's get into it. We'll go the same way we kind of do. This is where the positions, quote unquote positions, come into play. We're going to go corner infield, middle infield, and outfield. We can skip catcher if there's a catcher worth mentioning. Obviously, Kevin, go ahead and throw him out there and throw him into any category you want. We've got some honorable mentions to look at as well. But starting off with corner infield, I'm gonna throw this little battle that I came up with just because of the first names, right? It's just easy to throw it out here. They're both Nolans. The one who's gonna get the most out of the trade out of St. Louis, of course, is the Nolan Gorman of the side. He gains a lot from Nolan Arenado leaving St. Louis and going to Arizona. So both of these guys are corner infield eligible. Of course, Arenado being third base, Nolan Gorman has the luxury of having second base and third base eligibility to his name going into 2026. Maybe he keeps both positions going into 2027. I don't really care at this moment. We're just talking about corner infield. Which one of these guys, then they both have their own baggage, right? Obviously, Arenado, even going into a new situation, maybe even a better ballpark. Maybe it's kind of, you know, kind of a wash really from St. Louis to Arizona, but a better lineup, more centered in on the offense, on a better offense around him as well. But of course, as we talked about in our last episode, getting up there in age, whether or not he sticks for the whole season, you know, whatever. Nolan Gorman, it's only a question about, yeah, he might hit 20 home runs, but those might be the only 20 hits he gets throughout the course of the season. Is he going to tank your batting average, especially with more playing time? Does more playing time actually hurt you more than the volume that he could provide in the power categories due to that extra playing time? Which one of these guys would you feel more comfortable? Which Nolan would you feel more comfortable being either your first guy off the bench to fill in one of those spots for power, or even possibly being your corner infielder to supplement your power that you may not have gotten earlier on in your drafts?
Yeah, we ended last episode with me saying that due to our discussion that we'd had, I'm probably more interested in Nolan Arenado than I thought I would be. And this is a perfect example of why. Yes, I know you said we don't care about batting average, but these guys have different baggage, and that's what it is. I mean, if you are at the, you know, the threat of a guy putting up a 205 batting average again, that just hurts so bad. His highest projected batting average is 223. And yeah, all of the projections have him for at or near a career high in plate appearances because of what you alluded to, right? The playing time is there for him. So yes, that reason alone has me leaning Arenado, and probably 9 times out of 10, that's the choice I would make here between these two. The intriguing thing is, you know, if we see a guy getting regular playing time, more regular than he's had in the past, do we see Nolan Gorman give us that 236 batting average that we got in 2023 when he hit 27 home runs and got everybody excited about him going into 2024? It's possible. That was also his lowest strikeout rate, and his projected strikeout rates are around what he did in 2023, still well over 30%, 32 point something is every projection system. Let me double check the PLV projected really quickly. Oh, there it went. It's gone. But it really doesn't matter. We talked about it with Murakami. We've talked about him recently. These guys projected for well over a 30% strikeout rate. It's highly unlikely that they're going to spike us a good batting average. Yeah. Nolan Arenado probably will not give us the home runs that Gorman does if they both get the playing time they're projected for. He's going to have a few less home runs. But at this point in a draft, if I can get that moderate power with a 250-ish batting average, I'm much more interested.
See, now as I'm like looking a little bit tighter at this position, like a better comparison, probably, I like the Nolan because obviously,
yeah, yeah, name, of course,
they were just teammates. But the other former teammate of Nolan Arenado that probably lines up even better is Paul Goldschmidt. Like just in the situation that he's in versus Arenado's, you know, they're similar in age range. These guys are not like Arenado projected for just under 14 home runs, 65 RBI by PLV. Goldschmidt at just under 18 home runs and 65 RBI. So like they're, but neither one of them, you know, I don't know how much I trust 527 plate appearances for Paul Goldschmidt in that situation that he's in. But I can see 558 plate appearances for Nolan Arenado, health permitting. And so there's got to be some kind of give and take and thought process about how much you trust the plate appearances. You talk about this all the time. It's like usually it's the other way around. It's like usually you're like, hey, you know what? I think they're going to find their way into more plate appearances so I can prorate their averages and their rates, if you will, their home run RBI rates per plate appearance and bring it up a little bit more. At the same time, you've got to start looking at, you know, the situations on the other side. It's like, hey, if I think Paul Goldschmidt's not going to get 527 plate appearances, is 17 home runs out of 527 good enough for me to actually care about this situation?
Yes, I would still lean Arenado here because I am much more comfortable with him getting those plate appearances. It's not like he's projected for 650, right? These plate appearances are based on games played in the 130s, it looks like, by most of these projection systems. Mm-hmm. I'm comfortable with that for Arenado. I am not with Goldschmidt.
The other name that I got on here, it goes into it for the corner infield, is interesting because he's not eligible in the corner infield quite yet. And he is a question mark and there's a lot of risk involved. But if you're like me and you took little to no risk in the first part, half of your draft or the first two thirds of your draft, maybe you can afford a little bit of risk on your bench. Maybe you can afford that extra stash. So the name that I want to pick your brain about is Bryce Eldridge. Will he gain first base eligibility in San Francisco? I think that there's not really much of a question whether or not the power will be there if healthy, if he's in the lineup, if he's playing regularly. It's just all those questions. All those questions are kind of a big deal. And is somebody like Eldridge worth the stash early on, especially if you're drafting today or not? He'll come up in our wild card episode, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Especially if his ADP hasn't changed, right? Or hasn't gone above the 325 mark come, you know, mid-March. And it very well could if there's some kind of guarantee from the Giants that he will be on the opening day roster. He did make his debut. So, like, it was an espresso of an amount. Not even just a single shot, not even like a venti or anything like that. So how much do you trust that situation, or how much are you willing to take the risk on somebody like that? Because there could be a big output in what he can provide to you. He could be not the whole package per se, but like somebody who's not hurting you in any category and helping you tremendously, even in San Francisco.
Yeah. This is the type of guy that I will always look at this point in a draft towards the end. And it really depends on, I can't draft too many of these guys, right? Mm-hmm. So if I don't have a stash yet, Eldridge is definitely appealing. Now, the first base slash DH, will he get first base eligibility? It may take longer than we'd hope, depending on how they do that, even when he does come up. How much is Devers still playing first base? How are they playing DH? I think that we're probably looking at seeing Eldridge earlier if it is so Devers can DH and he's the first baseman probably. But, you know, there's such a wide range of outcomes, and I think it's worth taking a shot that it, you know, we don't have to get Nick Kurtz. We don't want what Jack Caglione did. I am certain it's going to be somewhere in the middle. I would say that we probably lean a little more towards from smack dab in the middle, what Caglione and Kurtz did last season. We probably lean a little more towards Kurtz is my expectation. Not nearly what Kurtz did, but towards that side of in between. So he's very appealing. It definitely 100% would be affected by, do I already have either an injury stash or another guy that we do not know what we can expect for playing time to begin the season?
All right. I'm not trying to mix and match episodes here, but I can't help but like put these guys together. They're similar enough. They're about 50 picks apart in ADP right now. Very different positions, really. But Chase DeLauder or Bryce Eldridge, which one are you willing? I mean, you're not stashing them both. Which one are you more confident will be in the lineup day one and then won't change? Because they're both going to give you power. They're both power. You know,
and DeLauder, we have the injury risk to factor in as well. But I think I can't quit DeLauder. I think it, if I'm taking my stash here, and like I said, it could be injury or prospect. In this case, not necessarily. I would say it's both, but actually, I think it's just injury. I think if he's healthy, you brought this up when we talked about him a couple of episodes back. It's injury what we're worried about. If he's healthy, we're gonna see him. So, I lean DeLauder.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I probably am gonna go Eldridge just because there's less. Like, I don't know. Maybe there's not less risk. Maybe Eldridge, you know, just as injury concerned as DeLauder would be. But, I agree that DeLauder's in the lineup if healthy. I just don't know if he'll stay healthy. And that's, you know, he hasn't been able to do it yet throughout his career.
One of the big concerns, and very few people have overcome this. Aaron Judge absolutely has overcome this, but I don't see Eldridge's strikeout rate improving much over his entire career, being 6'7" tall and having to cover so much of the zone.
Right.
Very, very few people have done. I think before Judge, we have to go back to like Richie Sexson for anybody that's been very successful that was that tall. Mm-hmm. So that's an added concern.
All right. Well, Kevin, any other corner infielders that kind of caught your eye as you were looking for power late in your drafts?
Yeah, a couple. I have to bring up Josh Bell.
Yeah, I made sure not to because I just assumed.
Yeah, he got us our 20 home runs. Didn't quite get my 70-70. He's the guy I talked about all last season. 250-ish, 20 home runs, 70-70. He was mid-60s in the runs in RBI. Got the 20. The lineup, he hasn't been in good lineups for a while, his entire career, actually. Sure. Right. So yes, Minnesota's lineup isn't the greatest, but I think he's locked in there. Roster resource, Jason has him in the three hole. That's going to be a lot of plate appearances. He is a switch hitter. He does perform better from the left side, so he may sit, but he would be large side of platoon if he starts sitting versus some others. So yes, Josh Bell, I'm still in on, and his, you know, last 3 to 4 months of 2025 were actually better than that 20-70-70 because he started off so slow last season. I dropped him. I had him on, I think he was my highest rostered player. Doesn't surprise anybody. And I dropped him almost everywhere, but I was able to get him back in all of those spots. Nobody was paying attention to Josh Bell. So him, and then I mentioned guys coming off injury. Tristan Casas is worth that shot here if you're not taking Eldridge, not taking DeLauder. I think he's worth a shot here still. It's just there's so much unknown with Casas, but I think he definitely bears mentioning.
Yeah, I mean, you have to pay attention. I think there's still where he ends up or how much he ends up playing, with Wilson Contreras being, you know, the everyday first baseman after
that's worrisome that he, you know, bringing in Contreras, that's letting us know the Red Sox at least need a really solid backup plan, if not plan A, right?
Yeah, because for any, just throwing it out there too, it's like for any of those of us that are like, oh, let's just cross our fingers that the Red Sox actually brought him in so he could, you know, get some catcher eligibility back because their catcher situation is not the strongest.
True.
I don't know that that's going to, I don't, I mean, they've already announced it on the trade that he's starting it for, like, he's playing first base. Yeah. I'm not holding my breath that that'll happen as much as, you know, as nice as that would be if I do roster him anywhere. Casas doesn't really have anywhere to play except DH. And I mean, that would be the place where he would play as he were coming back. You know, as he's rehabbing and coming back, just so you can kind of ease him into that. You still have the likes of Yoshida to kind of feed at that position and other guys that need to get into the rotation on top of wanting to actually, I mean, the only other opening too is you give a little bit more DH time to Contreras and let Casas play first base as well. So maybe there's a couple openings there. I'm worried. I'm also worried the fact that they haven't traded him. Like, I almost like wish they, like there's got to be something worse about him that nobody is interested in paying even like 85 cents on the dollar for Tristan Casas at this point, which makes me a little bit more worried, not only as a fantasy player, but also, you know, as a Red Sox fan. All right, let's move then into our middle infield as I find all of my windows. There we go. Well, I'll throw it out there because this one's a little bit boring. I like your pick better. But the name that just kind of popped out at me as I'm looking through PLV projections at the position was Jake Cronenworth. Mm-hmm. And I could have put him in the corner. He'll have first and second base eligibility. And he should be playing, probably playing a mix of both positions again throughout the course of 2026. But he's just the epitome of your boring, you know, glue guy, oatmeal, whatever you want to call it. That again, pending injury, which he has had some, you know, bumps and bruises along the way, but nothing too concerning in my mind. And so just being able to like go ahead and plug him in as, again, first guy off the bench, eligible at, you know, the corner, the middle, in a pinch, second, you know, at second base or first base as well. And knowing that with that volume does come opportunity. And he will at least do enough in that to not hurt you in that category. He's not going to hurt you anywhere, really. Overall, he's not your Nolan Gorman. Nolan Gorman ranks at the top of all of these filters that I've got on my spreadsheet here, just in home runs and in RBI. But the damage that he can do, obviously, in the other categories, that brings it down. Jake Cronenworth's not a concern in that realm. Is it too boring, though, like where it's not enough in that power category that you're really like taking any notice, or does it really matter at this point in the draft?
No, I think the interesting thing to me about Cronenworth, and I haven't rostered him on many teams, but I have more in recent years. It was always the price that kept me away when he was being drafted much earlier in drafts and for higher auction amounts. I was not interested. Now, when we're talking about this point, I do have interest, and I think it's intriguing when he has gotten the plate appearances over 600 in his career. The least amount of home runs he's hit is 17. He's projected by some of these projection systems close to or over 600 plate appearances, but he's low, mid to low teens in home runs is the projection. And he's got those double digit to mid teens home runs when he's been much, when he's only had 500 plate appearances. I agree with you. I think he's going to be at that 600 or more plate appearances, probably mostly first base, but also second base, and he can move around. So no, I think there is enough power here. My concern is, and I'm wondering about the projections a little bit, because we have close to 1,200 plate appearances over the past two seasons, hitting 241 and 246. I know how volatile batting averages and things, but the projections really have him down to what he did in 2023 when he hit 229. That's where he's being projected for batting average. I tend to think we have 1,200 plate appearances over the last two seasons with him exceeding that. So, yeah, at this point, Cronenworth is definitely someone I would consider.
Yeah, he's also just one of those few guys where you're like, all right, 63 RBI with only 14 home runs. I can see that. But, like, you're not getting 60, 70 RBI out of a lot of guys. There's not that option doesn't exist that far down in your draft. So if you can find somebody that you feel as though can stretch into that 70 plus RBI range with enough plate appearances, you're going to, you know, that rate doesn't matter as much. Again, that oatmeal, that glue, that guy that he's going to be the one that you end up streaming into your roster anyway, off of free agency. If it's somebody that can be a bench streamer, for your team throughout the course of the season, saving you the headache of having to mix and match, again, being able to help you and or at least not hurt you in those categories, that's what attracts me to the likes of Jake Cronenworth. I'm just not worried about what he's going to do. I'm not excited about it, but I'm not worried either. This was tough because I really wanted to make sure we had like a shortstop, and I don't really feel comfortable with any of the guys that were shortstop eligible until the name you throw out there. And I like it because I don't like it. Like, I like that you're going to talk about Anthony Volpe here, but I'm also not happy about it because I'm like one of those things where I'm rooting for Jose Caballero to have plenty of playing time from the jump. So talk to me about why Anthony Volpe, who's going at an ADP right now. Sorry, all of my ADP numbers too are January 1, 12 team drafts from the NFBC, January 1 through January, what's today? The 29th.
That's what I have as well.
382 and a half. So 383, you can get them pretty much at the end of your drafts, as you can with just about all these guys. So well within that 325 mark. Anthony Volpe, why is this of interest to you at the middle infield spot?
Very similarly to Jake Cronenworth, a player that I have not been interested in the past, and a lot of that having to do with the price for a guy in this case that I just couldn't stomach the batting average at the price Volpe was costing. But not only the power here, this is a legitimate 2020 candidate. He's done that with the bad batting average. Yeah, he gets to that 70 plus RBI. He's had 90 runs scored just two seasons ago. And at this price, and with the recent news that he's already participating in more workouts than the Yankees expected at this time, and we had been told they were hopeful. That I hate that word. Yeah. So that was another big concern that maybe alleviated a little bit. He's working out. We were told he probably wouldn't be available until May 1st. This, if he's working out and he responds well to these, and this is fairly new reports, so we'll see over the next few days how he responds and if he continues to ramp things up. Yes, it does concern me with my Caballero, in spite of what I said to begin the show about we need to make up for all the home runs he wouldn't give us. He's the guy that you don't have to put him in your lineup every lineup scoring period, Caballero, right? And he has all that eligibility, so yeah, when I need somebody at any position except first base, I could throw Caballero in there and hopefully get a couple stolen bases during that scoring period. So I'm with you on that. But if we get this ADP won't last if we get more good news on Volpe's health as well. So if you want to jump in at the end of a draft on Anthony Volpe, the time is now. And I think it is absolutely worth taking that shot if he's going to be healthy and ready to go earlier than we thought.
I give an extra shout out, just an honorable mention at this position. Well, I could have done it anywhere because he's eligible in three spots. Brooks Lee. Now, I mean, I don't think there's any question really that he was locked into a starting position going into it. But just to kind of weave in any kind of news and notes whatsoever, is Edwin Julian got traded to
Colorado.
That's right. Yeah. Colorado, freeing up just one more mouth to feed in the infield in Minnesota. But being, you know, ADP just over the mark that we're looking at 333, triple eligibility, 15 home runs, 61 RBI projected by PLV. But that is through 560 plate appearances. I think he gets that number. So that volume does play, especially if he's playing pretty much every single day at shortstop. We talk about this all the time. Not a position that most teams want to platoon or mix and match with or move people around. You're my shortstop, you're my shortstop. If you're not my shortstop, you're not anything to me, type of situation. So Brooks Lee would be somebody, especially later in my drafts, that, you know, 15 home runs is not carrying your team. Like you said, your mark is 24. But with all that eligibility, you know, you can be that glue that fills in at middle, corner, second, third, short, and allows you to get that position up to that 24-25 home run mark. He allows you to have that flexibility and get to those targets without having to rely on a bunch of fab or rely on one guy that goes down. You're like, oh man, that's killing me. So Brooks Lee would be somebody at least just keep an eye on. If he's not really moving in ADP, if you're keeping him right around 333, I think that's a decent little value for somebody who's not going to hurt you anywhere.
Yeah, and one thing that we typically discuss at least a little bit when we're talking about this, these guys at this point in the draft, is this helping with our fab early in the season? Take guys at the end of the draft that you would fab for the first week or two of the season, and Minnesota has a pretty heavy schedule to open the season. Everybody plays three games that opening weekend. Everybody has a six-game week in the American League the first week. Some National League teams have a seven-game week, but then Minnesota does have a seven-game week right away that second full week of the season. Mm-hmm. So we do have, you know, 13 games in 14 days the first two full weeks of the season for Minnesota, something that I'm already trying to add in as I look at some of these guys at the end of a draft, because some of them that first week or two of the season, that even if we are using them, will be there. These are the spots we'll be churning on a roster. So starting to look at schedules a little bit too. And Minnesota does have a fairly nice schedule. They get to play at Baltimore to open the season, at Kansas City with the fences moved in. Then they're at home versus Tampa, Detroit, and at Toronto. So not too bad of volume for Minnesota bats going into the season.
Yeah, fair. All right, let's move into outfield now, Kevin. I'll let you lead us, tee us off here. We know, of course, we're talking about NFBC. You need five outfielders. So a lot more mixing and matching, especially with your OF4s and OF5s, who might still be available to either fill in as your OF5 or maybe your first outfielder sitting on your bench.
Yeah, I got a couple of guys here, and there's probably several more in the outfield that you will bring up, but a couple I want to point out for certain. If Jesus Sanchez had performed any better at all after he moved to Houston last season, we wouldn't be able to talk about him on this episode. He wouldn't be low being drafted late enough for us to discuss him. I think that that was change of scenery mid-season. I think Jesus Sanchez is going to be Jesus Sanchez, which is close to 20 home runs. Decent batting average, not good. Still hurts us a bit, but doesn't destroy it. And Roster Resource has him as strong side platoon in that outfield in Houston. I agree with that. And I think that Jesus Sanchez, for those that are willing to make their lineups with platoon guys, which I, as I said at the beginning of the show, we have to, we can't draft enough power without our in-season maintenance. So I think Jesus Sanchez could be a big boost here. And then later, he just didn't make the cut in age for us to talk about him on last episode. But Andrew Benintendi is going to hit 20 home runs. That's what he does. And yes, the White Sox lineup, not good. He's at the top of it. It's getting a little better, little by little. The RBI should improve this season. And Benintendi, and he's available in the, what would be this spot in our 15-team leagues as well. He's someone we can take at the end of a draft, last couple of rounds of a 15-team league, and he's still available. And I have no problem in a 15-team league with Andrew Benintendi being my fifth outfielder to start the season.
Yeah, that's fine. I remember, I don't have his player page up at the moment, but when Benintendi went into Chicago, signed that, I think is still the White Sox like largest deal ever they've ever given out. He was like, I'm gonna hit for more power. I'm gonna hit for power now. Like that's just who I'm gonna be. You're like, oh, that makes sense. You know, it's a park that, you know, power hitters should be able to at least take advantage of to some degree. And he did nothing. He did absolutely nothing.
Five home runs in 621 plate appearances.
Yes, exactly. That's what he did. And so I'm like, where's this 20 home runs coming from? Because that's the only thing in my brain about Benintendi now is like, he's just all talk and no bite. It, literally, at least that one season. It was a couple seasons ago. I think it literally makes that season alone has made him a sleeper for all future seasons because he could always do that. Right. You know, he was doing something. He's the reason why he got that contract from the White Sox, and he was kind of showing those signs in Boston before that. But that's just what I associate with Andrew Benintendi.
Yeah, 2022 and 2023, 1,142 plate appearances, 10 home runs. And then 24 and 25, 992 plate appearances, 40 home runs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's to your point right there.
So the name that came up, and I obviously want to get your take on here, is because it's interesting because he doesn't have a home yet. It's Austin Hayes is the name. You know, you're like, oh great, Cincinnati, all that. It's like, oh, well, he's not in Cincinnati, and even if he was, does he have a full-time gig? Can he volume his way into his projections? His projections by PLV does plop him in at the 16 home run, 63 RBI mark through just shy of 500 plate appearances. So if he finds the right role and he can get a full-time gig, probably on not so great of a team, he's 30 years old, maybe he tries to find a one-year deal where he can kind of prove himself as long as they'll give him the playing time. There's a lot of ifs, right? Again, with this situation, but is that the type of risk worth taking? I talked a lot about Eugenio Suarez on my panel, just because he's another free agent, still free agent, power hitter that you're like, hey, no matter what he does, as soon as he signs, his ADP goes up. I don't care if he signs in Colorado or if he signs in Miami. Like his ADP goes up just because that's what happens. People catch notice. They realize, oh, that's right. He can hit home runs, and this is what I need. Austin Hayes is not a prolific home run hitter, but he is still a name that if signing with the right spot could spike. Now, we're talking about spiking an ADP from his current 433 up to what? You know, the 400, 375?
Yeah, where is ADP is, 383 in overall when you don't just go recently because he's dropped because he doesn't have a team, to your point. Exactly. Yeah. So I think you're right in the correct range there.
So, I mean, this is a guy that if you're drafting today, you should feel decently confident about like the value you're getting with your very last pick in those drafts. But like, does he need, like, is he team? He's context dependent. This is not a question. He's context dependent. Like, he could sign with the wrong spot just because they're willing to give him a contract, and he could sign with a great opportunity. The question is how many of those opportunities actually exist. Is this a situation that you're, you know, it's not worth, like, it, for me, it's like, it's a name to just watch and I'll be willing to pay the extra freight if he signs in the right spot, because I don't think it'll go up high enough for me to be out of range.
That's exactly where I'm at.
Yeah. Rather than, you know, grabbing him at now, the end of my draft, if, and crossing my fingers.
If I'm drafting right now and I really don't like anybody and that I'm at my last pick, I could make that move now. And then if I don't like the spot, first fab run, he's one of my drops when I'm making the adjustments that first fab run before the season starts. But to your point, I agree. I don't think we have to, because I don't think he's going to move up enough that I still wouldn't be in at that point, or wouldn't be more in and willing to take that chance at that point.
And then the other name I'm watching, I'm probably not drafting, but I'm just kind of watching just because of how he ended his season, is Cody Clemens. Again, going back to Minnesota, Rush Resource has him expected to be coming off the bench, but he came off the bench to start last season, and we found a lot of value there with multiple position eligibility going into 2026. You obviously Josh Bell is there. We talked about him kind of taking over first base pretty much, you know, almost every day. Even if he's in a platoon, it's going to be the strong side of the platoon. Overall,
we have Victor Caratini listed as their everyday DH right now on Roster Resource as well.
That's so not an everyday room. Situation. No,
there's room. Yeah.
So there's going to be, especially with his eligibility, he's going to find his way into the lineup, even if it's 4 out of 7 days in a 7 day work week. And if he can show that kind of power that he was showing in the second half of last year, he's going to find his way in more often. So Cody Clemens, just somebody I'm just kind of watching, especially to kind of fill that power. The reason he would be valuable is if he continues to show the power. That's it. So if he shows the power, great, grab him. I hold on to him until he stops showing it. If he doesn't show the power, whatever. You drop and run. But Cody Clemens is kind of like just an added shout out at this position because it's not just outfield. He's going into the season with, oh geez, I just had him up here. What's his eligibility? Cody Clemens, outfield, second and first. So you don't really get much better than that in deeper formats. So 438 ADP. This is definitely a last pick type of situation. But projected even just through with, this is also what draws me to him, is 285 plate appearances, 10 home runs. Mm-hmm. So we're averaging out about 21 home runs per 600 plate appearances. So if he can find his way into more playing time, he can get back. He can get closer to that 2021 mark without really, not being detrimental to your average. I projected at a 236 spot, not helping you either. But I think we figured out last year that like 235, 30, 236 was like your kind of midway point nowadays. Of course, you want something a little bit higher to kind of balance out those bad weeks and bad months, that stretches that a lot of your guys are going to go through. But on average, 236, it's not hurting you.
Yeah, I was looking at him earlier as well. And the Minnesota lineup, as we've already talked a mm-hmm. little bit, is intriguing because as bad as they were, and they were absolutely horrific at times last season, they have a lot of good pieces that we're interested in. And if they would happen to all even improve slightly over last season and do anything close to what we expected of them going into 2025, in 2026, the entire lineup is going to be much better as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's your position, my position. A list I wanted to throw at you. And of course, if you got any other names, Kevin, let's throw them in here as well. But this is honorable mentions. We're talking about power. So got to look at slugging percentage as a common stat, right? And past ADP of 300, PLV projections have three guys, the top three projected slugging percentage, of course, have less than 400 or right around 400 or less at bats being projected as well. So again, one of those things where it's like, if you think this guy can actually get close, more playing time, there's more to tap into here. Jamahi Jones, who is going to be playing for the first time in his career in, I think, 5 years that he's been in the majors playing for the same team 2 years in a row. He's played for a different team every year since he's come up into the majors, which is nuts. Projected for 198 at bats, but you know, 590, he's 600 ADP, highest slugging percentage of the three. Dominic Canzone in Seattle, 408. We talk about him like every other week as an option, right, in Fab, depending on matchups and availability and what have you. But 408 at bats, we got at a 380 ADP. So there's a little bit more, you know, people are looking at him a little bit more often in your Fab leagues. Tyler O'Neill, no question on the power. It's just whether or not, you know, how long he'll be on the field and how many mouths Baltimore has to feed, how much they're going to baby him. They did give him plenty of money, so it's not as though that he's not getting paid. Projected at 330 at bats, 449 ADP. Again, last pick flyer to take on. Any one of these guys you think can outperform the projected at bat totals to then tap into that slugging, which would obviously translate into at least RBI, if not, you know, some added power or home runs.
Well, the hope is Tyler O'Neill, because that it's always been injury related for him. Mm-hmm. But I don't have confidence in that happening. And I don't really see an increase in at bats for Jamahi Jones either. But he is one of these guys, because he's short side platoon, and he's even better than his overall numbers, because he did get a few plate appearances versus righties last season, but all seven of his home runs and only 120 plate appearances versus lefties. He's going to be someone when Detroit has a lefty heavy rotation coming up for their week, we will definitely be talking about Jamahi Jones. And because of this limited playing time, he will be available in those instances. And so we will be talking about him just like we do Canzone throughout the season quite a bit this year. Jamahi Jones is one of the guys. I've got a little list of short side platoon guys so I don't forget to look at their schedules each week. Jamahi Jones is definitely on that list, close to the top as well.
He's also close to the top of this next list. I talked about it a little bit with Cody Clemens, but I was also looking at home runs per 600 plate appearances. And again, it's not a one-to-one. You can't do this in general, but just kind of seeing what that rate would be based on plate appearances that they're projected to be. Tyler O'Neill tops the list at just under 29. We had Matt Wallner on the list as well. Right around 27, Zach Cole third on the list. Outfielder Houston, only projected at 383 plate appearances, but if he were to get to 600, we've got a projection of 26 home runs. Jamiah Jones at 24.5. Colby Thomas in, well, West Sacramento, again, 324 projected plate appearances, but split that up into 600, you could get above 23 home runs there. Dominic Canzon, Christopher Morel, Jesus Sanchez, you brought him up earlier. Benintendi, you brought him up earlier. Joey Weimer, and then Davis Schneider rounds up that list. The only position, only player on this list that has anything but outfield eligibility as well. Schneider, somebody, you know, we've talked about quite a bit in the last 2 years as options in Fab, especially at the end of, I feel like at the end of 24 and then throughout 2025. Only projected at 343, but in the same vein as Cody Clemens, if he were to get up to 60, he's a 20 plus home run guy or option, especially if he has the right matchups. Any name on this list that kind of stands out to you as this is similar to what you just talked about, like looking at these platoon splits, whether you're short or large out of the platoon, playing those matchups and taking advantage of those rates or those projected rates?
Yeah, we briefly discussed him before we hit the record button this evening, and Davis Schneider is always someone I'm interested in, and I will never forget 3 years ago now in Arizona when we had first started seeing Davis Schneider and we were like, oh, this power is amazing. And I was talking to Nick Pollock in Arizona, and he's the one, this is when our POV was just, and we're just starting to look right at the different aspects of hitting. And he said, Davis Schneider's quality of contact is as close to Aaron Judge as anybody in this league. And I will never forget that. And if he's getting playing time, I'm interested.
Sure.
So that is something we want to see how this is going to work out in Toronto. Is he definitely getting all the short side platoon days and maybe a little more? Then he 100% will be on our streaming list when we're looking at Fab throughout the year.
Yeah. Any other names in general? I know we have to bring up the obligatory, like we don't talk about catchers and we don't talk about UT only. I brought up Bryce Eldridge, granted, but I expect him to get some first base eligibility in the first, you know, maybe 2 or 3 months of the season if he's called up early. UT only players in general, any catchers, any UT only players that kind of catch your eye?
I got a couple of those, and then I have one guy that is eligible for all three of the categories we talked about. Catcher started out on fire last year, slowed down a bit, but was still valuable at times as a streamer, and that's Carson Kelly. And he's being drafted late enough where we can bring him into that conversation. I think in most 15-team leagues, he might actually be on someone's roster, but I think he'll be available throughout the season in 12s for sure, at least to start out, unless he starts out on fire like he did last season. But yeah, he was valuable throughout the season. The UT-only guy, I agree with you. We've talked about this a couple times. I think it's more likely we see him sign overseas than with an MLB team, but Marcell Ozuna is being drafted this late and doesn't have a team yet. If he lands on an MLB team, it's definitely worth the shot. He's another one of those guys I've never rostered much at all. Definitely don't know if I've drafted him, but he's somebody that we'll have to pay attention to depending on the landing spot and the playing time we expect him to get. And then I have a guy that people are going to wonder why I'm bringing him up at all when we're talking the power category. And listening to some of the Kansas City Royals beat reporters, I did the Royals episode on Benched with Bubba a couple weeks back talking the Royals roster. And I surprised Bubba, and I still believe Jonathan India is going to be in the Royals lineup nearly every day. Second base, giving some guys a break in outfield from time to time, designated hitter. I think he's in the lineup ahead of Carter Jensen when Salvador Perez is behind the plate. I think Jonathan India gets this playing time, and with the fences moving in Kansas City, in the power alleys, not center field. It's the alleys where it's moving in, and that's where he tends to hit the ball. We get back to that mid to upper teens home runs from Jonathan India, and he's available, and you can put him anywhere in your lineup.
I didn't really think I was going to spend any more time on Marcelo Ozuna, but I will say, like, especially looking at his ADP, talking about Austin Hayes before, like, is that the kind of risk? Is that the situation I want to use my last pick with? Yes, it is a free pick. Yeah, I can just drop him, but I only have one last pick, right? I'm not going to drop like my bottom five guys, most likely, hopefully not, in the first week of Fab. But Marcelo Ozuna has enough power across the board. If he does sign here in the U.S., he's going to sign. Like, he only plays one position. Like,
yeah, he doesn't jump a few picks. He jumps a few rounds if he signs.
Yeah, exactly. And so that value does present itself. So it is something you have to at least consider right there, toward the end of your drafts. All right. Well, power will be tough, especially if you are trying to fill power late and not hurt yourself elsewhere. So definitely some names you have to consider. And as you are building out, and this is easy for us to say, right? It's the first episode we've done. So it's like all of our focus is on this first category. We're going to say this every single episode. Speed is going to be so hard to catch if you're trying to not hurt yourself in other categories. Like, it's just going to happen. But you do have to kind of think it all through. So, Kevin, anything else you want to add or tack in here at the end? Hopefully I don't get kicked out again. And I can make it all the way through to the end.
No, it sounds great, Adam. Once again, it's great to be back. It's always amazing hopping in here and talking baseball for a little bit with you, and hoping that we say a few things that other people want to hear or want to listen to and give them some ideas. But I think my biggest takeaway is what I led with. Don't forget how much power we do need. I think it might surprise some people to realize that that's what we're shooting for. 24 to 25 home runs per position, which means we're not getting it from all of them. We have to get more than that from some, as close to it as we can. I think so. When you're looking at a so-called rabbit, right, and one of them's projected for 4 home runs and the other for 11, take the one with 11. Make that your tiebreaker. I think that when we're looking for other things, bring power into the equation, even if it's only for a little bit, at the very end of your decision. And then so many of these players, where they're being drafted and not being drafted in many leagues, most of these players we talked about haven't been drafted in every league that's taken place in January. Even these are 12 team leagues. Some of the players we've talked about are being drafted late enough that would be the case for 15s as well. But you're not married to any of these guys, mm-hmm. right? Keep that in mind. You don't have to be perfect making this decision. If you have a hunch of why you think, like me with Jonathan India, listen to your gut. We don't all have roto gut that Vlad Sedler has. We all have a gut, and it's more upsetting when you don't listen to it and it was right than when you do listen to it and it's wrong.
That is nothing has been more true that anybody has ever said. It's the worst feeling. Yes. Oh, man, I don't trust my gut anymore. But that one time that you don't listen to it, that's how it works, right? Murphy's Law. All right. Well, I think that is a great place to end it off. We will get into more of these category previews as we go on. We'll hit the speed, our top speed preview, in the next episode. But until then, that is going to do it for episode 241 of On the Wire. After all that, I am Adam Howe. On behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. And we bid you goodbye.